Devaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. From Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 4, Text 29.
Vikara-kyaya-manopi
Pratyagatmanam-antaram
Nani-rupyosi-anup-api
Sache-chit-sama-atma-vad
Vikara,
Vikara,
the transformation of created existence.
Kyayamanaha,
appearing.
Really.
Api,
although.
Pratyak Atmanam,
the Supreme Soul.
Antara,
Antara,
without.
Without.
Na,
Na,
not.
Na.
Nurupya,
Nurupya,
conceivable.
Conceivable.
Asti,
Asti,
is.
Anu,
Anu,
a single atom.
Api,
Api,
even.
Siat,
it is so.
It is so.
If Chit Samaha,
equally spirit,
Atmavat,
remaining as it is without
change. Translation.
Although perceived, the transformation of even a single atom of material nature has no ultimate definition without reference to the Supreme Soul. To be accepted as factually existing, something must possess the same quality as pure spirit. Eternal unchanging existence. Report. A mirage of water appearing in the desert is actually a manifestation of light. The false appearance of water is a specific transformation of light. That which falsely appears as independent material nature is similarly a transformation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Material nature is the external potency of the Lord.
Om Agyana Timarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Shakshu Unminitanyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Milavisam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Bhavati Swaha Mukham Karoti Vacham Pangum Langayate Kirim Yat Kripa Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinatarinam Pancha Kalpa Trivyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Pratita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishyavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
This chapter is entitled The Four Categories of Annihilation, in which we have been hearing about the constant annihilation, occasional annihilation, material annihilation, and the final annihilation, as been explained by the devotees throughout the week. So the constant annihilation, of course, is what we're experiencing all the time. There's destruction happening in our body, in the universal egg, different elements, etc. Just in our body, we can see how there's constant change happening all the time. And Naimitika, or the occasional annihilation, which happens during the night of Lord Brahma, in which the three planetary systems also get destroyed. So this is explained as well, very simply. And Prakritika, the end of Brahma's 100 years, there's a total material destruction of the material universes. And of course, Antantika annihilation, this is the final destruction. And this is quite pertinent to us who are trying to get out of the entanglement of matter, because this mainly deals later on in text 35. It mainly deals with the living entity extracting itself from the false ego through discriminating knowledge and actual realization of Lord Achyuta. So this is something that we can, not saying that all the other types of annihilations are less important, but this is something that we, of course, are working on every single day, how we can become less attached to our false ego, less attached to our matter, the body, and the expansions of the body. So we've been hearing about this destruction. This is Krishna's energy, the material nature is being explained. And what is important is to understand that we, of course, the living entities, are actually Krishna's superior nature, with Krishna's superior energy, whereas the material energy is the inferior energy. Krishna explains that in Bhagavad Gita, that we have all these different shaktis, different potencies of Krishna, but actually the living entity is by far superior. But somehow or the other, when the living entity becomes influenced by dull matter, when the living entity with their free will becomes contaminated by dull matter, it becomes subordinate. So we're actually Krishna's superior nature. And in that way we have to then understand what is our relationship with Krishna's potencies. What is our relationship with the material nature, with the material energy? So it's not that we just study certain sections of the Bhagavatam that are only dealing with Krishna's internal potency, Krishna's yoga maya potency, etc. But for us to actually start getting detached from the false ego concept, we have to hear about Krishna's expansive energies. We have to hear about the wonderful opulences or potencies of Krishna. And in that way we start understanding how superior Krishna is, how Krishna, yes, he is the primary creator, he is the cause of all causes, and at the same time he does not directly touch the material energy. That through his energies he's expanding himself in creation. We hear of the Purusha avatars, how they are stemming, of course, from Lord Sankarshan, an expansion of Lord Balaram, who is none different from Krishna. So there's this creation that goes on in which Mahavishnu, Krishna's energy, he is sweating, and from his sweat comes the causal ocean. So if we compare that to ourselves, when we sweat, no one wants to lie in our sweat. And we don't create universes from our sweating. So Mahavishnu is lying there, and gradually he starts expanding himself by entering into the different universes. And from entering into the different universes to give life or to give activity, he expands himself and he enters into the every atom. So actually Krishna is the basis for everything, matter and spirit. So dull matter, matter comes from spirit and not the other way around. So we're being taught that actually spirit is coming from matter. But if we study Srimad Bhagavatam closely, we understand that if Krishna's glands is not there, all the material ingredients are there. Everything in the Mahatattva, all the elements, all the principal elements are there, but without Krishna's glancing, without Krishna's energy, nothing happens. So even for matter, even for the material universe to exist, we require Krishna's assistance. And Krishna, of course, does not directly touch the material energy. His expansions are touching the material energy through the three modes of material nature. So we get to understand these facts, and we become really, sometimes we become astonished, how do we actually understand Krishna's creation and destruction? Who is actually destroying? What's Lord Shiva doing? We're hearing that there for 100 years there's going to be intense drought, and then there's going to be flooding, and then Lord Sankarshan is going to burn the entire creation. And then we're thinking, what about Lord Shiva? What about this? What about that? There's so many technicalities. The main point, of course, for us to understand that it is all happening under Krishna's sanction, under Krishna's potency. We're trying to understand a forest, but before we understand a forest, we must understand a tree. So we have to get the basics of understanding Krishna's potency properly. So these aspects of destruction, or these categories of annihilation, are giving us an understanding of Krishna in his subtle form of time. So Krishna, through time, there's, you know, there's creation, there's maintenance, and there's destruction. This is the nature of the material world. And everyone is subject to these three. So down from the Indra Gopa to Lord Brahma, they are all going through this constant creation, maintenance, and annihilation. This is all happening. So the aspect of time makes us understand, okay, that is Krishna's subtle feature, time. In the spiritual world, of course, time is inconspicuous by its absence. In the material world, we see time through these four categories of annihilation. Whether it's 100 years of Lord Brahma, whether it's a night of Lord Brahma, a day of Lord Brahma, time is acting. So this is the nature of matter. In the spiritual world, of course, time is not there, as I mentioned, and the Brahman effulgence is there in its personal aspect, of course. There's no need for the sun and moon, etc. In the different rasas, of course, these things are there. Whereas in the material world, we do need the sun, we do need the moon, etc. And the Brahman effulgence in the material world is covered by the Mahatattva. So these two aspects are there. So then we can try and understand this in the purport. A very nice example is given how we can understand Krishna's material energy. It says here that a mirage of water appearing in the desert is actually a manifestation of light. So the false appearance of water is a specific transformation of light. Similarly, that which falsely appears as independent material nature is a transformation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the material energy, this is a transformation of one of Krishna's energies, which is inferior. So this is, of course, not a laborious thing that we can avoid studying or avoid analyzing. Understanding Krishna's Shaktis, Krishna's potencies, can actually give us realization of Krishna as a person, not just as an energy, not just as Brahman, not just as spirit or consciousness. As I mentioned, the final annihilation or the final destruction is dealing with the false ego being extricated from the living entity. And this is done through discriminating knowledge and practical realization of Lord Achyuta, the Infallible Lord. And this begins with the very basic principle Srila Prabhupada is explaining, that we get to see the temporariness of matter, that the material, just with our material body, what to speak of the universal egg, that is, from this chapter we can see that it's also undergoing constant changes. It will be annihilated at some point. And we do see with our own body as well that the body is changing all the time. But there is a constant, and that constant is the presence of the soul in the body. The super soul is also in the body. Otherwise, there is actually no value to matter. If we create a separatist mentality, if we separate Krishna from the material energy, then we will not understand Krishna. Because the material energy is coming from Krishna. All these elements are created primarily by Krishna. So we cannot separate Krishna from his energy. If you remove X from the equation, you cannot solve the equation. And that is why Krishna is saying in the 7th chapter, he's explaining that if we do not follow his guidelines and rules in trying to understand him, then we'll forever be in darkness. We have to become Krishna's devotees, not to analytically analyze with our concocted mind who Krishna is and how he's acting. And it's very nice to know that this topic of creation, annihilation is discussed in so many parts of the Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita, even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Lord Chaitanya is instructing the Goswamis, Srila Sanatana and Rupa Goswami, he starts also speaking about the process of creation. Not that they just jump to the juicy bits of Krishna's Rasa Lila, etc. They discuss this aspect of creation and destruction and maintenance, of course. How Krishna's potencies are working. So if the Lord himself and his associates are discussing these topics in great depth, then we should also discuss them in great depth. This is how we develop attraction for Krishna. This is how we gradually start breaking away from the false ego. We get this knowledge about Krishna from his bona fide representatives. So in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, just as Lord Chaitanya is finishing explaining the different rasas, different tastes, the five primary rasas, then he starts explaining creation. How wonderful Krishna's energies are working, how he expands himself, how he does not get touched by the material energy. This is just a very insignificant aspect of Krishna's potency. Now the next thing would be how we then relate to this material energy. We can see, we've tried to lord it over, and the resultant of that is, you know, we become covered, we're thrown deeper and deeper into ignorance, we have an identity crisis, we don't know who we are, we don't know who Krishna is. Although we're of a superior nature, when we associate, when we identify ourselves with this inferior nature, then that leads to gradual decline, and that casts us into ignorance. So when you go to battle, when you're on a battlefield, and the Bhagavatam explains different ways, different analogies to explain the world that we're living in. It's a forest fire, it's a deep hole, it's a war zone. So when you go on war, when you go to battle, you want to understand what you're facing. You're facing the material energy. You cannot go hand-on-hand battle with the material energy because you'll lose. If we think by our tiny, insignificant self we can actually overcome the material energy, then we're in a great illusion because we cannot. Even just to be in forgetfulness, we need Krishna. Krishna has to send his energy to cover us. To remember Krishna, we need him as well. So we are in every way eternally dependent on the Supreme Lord. And when we start understanding this dependency factor, when we start understanding our real nature, how we're part and parcel of him, then the false ego gradually starts going away. Because if you think you're supremely independent, why would you accept anyone else as being supreme? Why would you accept anything else but your body as being the all-in-all? The only thing we would do is embrace the material energy and keep it very near and dear to us, which is what we've been doing since time immemorial. We're embracing the material energy because we're misidentifying with it. We have no knowledge. We're just thinking, yeah, this is normal, this feels good. That just these are my senses, and what's been happening is things come and go at their own accord, and it's just falling into place. There's a big bang and things pop up, and then there's some demigods somewhere who are controlling the elements. So this is great, this is going on, I'm alright, I'm peaceful. And we can go on through life like this, but we're not dealing with the crux, we're not dealing with the false ego. It's like sometimes when you're sweeping and you're feeling a bit lazy, you just put the dust underneath the table. You hide it. So you can be following one process, you can be a jnani, you can be a yogi, you can be into alternative life, but we're just hiding from the false ego. We're just hiding it temporarily. We're not dealing with the main crux of why we're in the material world and why we're so attached to matter. We're trying to extricate Krishna from the equation. And that is why there's so much atheism. That, oh, God is spirit, this is matter, oh, it doesn't gel. But in the Bhagavatam we understand that matter arises from spirit. If there is no life in the body, if there is no soul, in the body, then matter is just not functioning. This is quite amazing. I remember last year when I went to Botswana and I was at a funeral, and you know the casket opens, and I've never been in front of a dead body, and I looked and I wanted to you know, poke it a bit and see what actually happens. So this is like, for me, first time experience, I'm like, wow, this is actually a dead body. Nothing's wrong. Like, the organs are there, but it's just not working. There's nothing attractive about this body as well. Right, so everything is there, the blood is there, the heart is still in there, the organs are still there, but it's not attractive. There's nothing going on. There's no activity. So there's no life, there's no soul in there. There's nothing, absolutely. So in the universal egg, all the ingredients can be there, all the elements can be there. But if Krishna does not glance over, if Krishna does not impregnate the universal egg, then nothing happens. There's no activity, there's no life, there's no jivas. So Krishna, in essence, is the source of everything, matter and spirit, and he says so in Bhagavad Gita. Now we have to accept that. Like, sometimes we don't understand things. Who here sometimes doesn't understand what they read in the Bhagavatam? And what has been the advice? Keep on reading. You'll understand. Krishna said, if you just keep reading and if you continue doing your service, you know, all these things will become gradually revealed in the heart. And you have to be a devotee of Krishna to understand Krishna. You have to be Krishna's friend. You can't be so inimical towards Krishna. Then you won't understand Krishna. Krishna says so. Then if you want to understand, you have to be my very dear friend. Then I'll make you understand. I'll try and make you understand a little bit of my nature. So we have to be favorable towards Krishna. We have to know how to be sensitive towards Krishna. We have to know how to handle Krishna's paraphernalia, how to handle Krishna's energy and his potencies. Not that we're just whimsical, or, you know, we hear of the demigods and then we say, oh, Indra or Shiva, Brahma, Sarasvati, Durga, Kalima. You know, it's like, whoa. No, we're whimsical with Krishna's parts and parcels, but that is not proper. Although they're, you know, they're Krishna's parts and parcels, they may have a certain rasa with Krishna. And that doesn't mean we speak down upon the demigods. How many of us can bring poison and hold it up here for the rest of our lives? This is what Lord Shiva did. And Lord Brahma, you know, you're born from someone's navel, you sit on a lotus, and you're given the opportunity to be the secondary creator. Now that is huge empowerment. You have to be empowered by Krishna. You can't do it alone. Even for us to see, to hear, all our senses, this Krishna is permitting all of this to happen. Now Krishna's energies are diverse. We're occupying a material body, and we cannot say that the material body is Maya. The material body, yes, it is temporary, but it is eternal because it is coming from Krishna. All the elements are eternal because they are coming from Krishna. Yes, as you know, Mahavishnu is lying on the causal ocean, the living entities are being expanded and they're being annihilated. Or the different elements are being expanded and they're being annihilated, or they're put into a dormant state. But they are eternal because they have a connection with Krishna. The Maya or the illusion is that we think it's all permanent. It will never deteriorate. That is our illusion. And that is why this final destruction is very important, because when we cut down the false ego, we understand that actually matter is going through different changes. It is created, it is maintained, and then it is annihilated. Do not become attached to matter. Your body, even the material structure, the material egg, do not become attached to it. Even though it offers some kind of variety, some kind of comfort for some time, but it is not a comfortable situation. So when you understand how there is so much constant annihilation, even up to such empowered entities like Lord Brahma, Even they go through hardships. Even they go through death. Fine, they don't have toothaches and, you know, they don't have things stabbed into their eyes or their ears, etc. But they're going through these annihilations. They're created, they're maintained. Now, before this canto, we were hearing about how Krishna annihilated the Yadu dynasty. And the essence was us to understand that we're not meant to be comfortably situated in the material world. Although Krishna is there. Krishna himself personally was in that family, but he was saying this is not a comfortable situation for the living entity. So the material world is not a nice place, even for devotees. We have all experienced that we have a little bit of trouble with our mind. Anyone experience a little bit of trouble with their mind? Okay. Like in the morning when you chant Hare Krishna, there's a little bit of tug of war. So that is our little frailty in Kali Yuga. That is our ailment, that the mind is giving us such a hard time. The conditioned mind is giving us such a hard time. We're Krishna's fragmental parts, but we struggle very hard with just the mind. In different yugas, yes, you had your Paramahamsas, you had your swan-like devotees. And they didn't have to undergo so many mental trips that we in Kali Yuga are now accustomed to. So this is because of constant contamination since time immemorial. We've been in this cycle of just creation, maintenance, destruction, creation, you know, birth and death over and over and over again. So this creates an impression in the consciousness. We get used to that kind of lifestyle. But one who actually wants to extricate himself from this situation, this person has to seek some higher knowledge. This person has to not just study scripture for the sake of studying scripture. Just as we're not following the rules and regulations just for the sake of following them. There's a goal in mind. We should know what our goal is. We should have a plan and a vision. So we have the material energy. Sometimes we don't even have to leave the temple to be confronted with it. It's everywhere. Maya, or this tendency to become attached to the false ego, will infiltrate, even in a subtle way, for the devotee. So this is going on all the time, so we have to equip ourselves through knowledge. We have to understand what we're actually dealing with. And then take the correct medicine. When you go into the drugstore or when you go into the pharmacy, there's so many different medicines. You know, when you have a cold sore, I get cold sores all the time, or when you have hay fever, when you suffer from hay fever. There's so many different things that you take. But there's always the best, or the one that everyone always recommends. Like, there is the best that will cure your hay fever very quickly. So we suffer from inflated false ego. And there is medicine to get rid of that false ego. And a prescribed medicine in this age that we're living in is chanting the names of Hari, chanting the names of Krishna. And when you chant someone's name, the attraction goes, you want to serve that person. So you perform devotional service under the guidance of a pure devotee. And then gradually this process of devotional service, when practiced and applied properly, will root out this false ego. Not just on the surface wipe it out, but actually root it out. So it's a very sensitive affair. Sometimes we see in the process of devotional service, when you come into the association of devotees, you know, you develop some level of faith, you associate with devotees, you take shelter of a spiritual master, and then you start practicing devotional service and going through the clearing process of bhajana kriya. Sorry, anatta nivritti. And sometimes this is very painful. because we are so attached to these unwanted things. That is why it is painful. It doesn't need to be painful, but because we identify so much with these bad qualities, because we identify with our anger, with our envy, or with our pride so much, when that gets cleared out, it's painful. Because we think, this is who I am. I am a man, and I'm from Siberia, or I'm from Murmansk, or I'm from Botswana, or I'm from wherever. I have this color hair. If anyone says anything about the Indian cricket team, you know, it hurts my feelings. Or about Pakistan or whatever. Someone says you're from Pakistan and I'm from India, it's such a big thing. Right? Because we're identifying with our external designations. And this starts, material existence begins and ends in the mind. This just starts with our mental concoctions of who we think we are. That is why the mind is such a target in yoga practice, because we're constantly concocting ideas. So if we want a mind that is purified, we engage this mind in Krishna conscious activities. If we want the best result, we engage the mind in Krishna conscious activities 24 hours a day. So we're always trying to become aware of Krishna. Even when we see him in his different manifestations, as Narayani Maharaji was explaining in the different lectures she was given, how do you see Krishna in your life every day? Or how does Krishna protect you every day? You walk out, relate something to Krishna, because ultimately everything is coming from Krishna. The different energies you see, how the tram is running, the sun, the stars, the trees, the birds, the other living entities, they are parts of Krishna, but they're in a dazed or in an illusion state. So always trying to remember Krishna and never to forget him. This is what sessions like these are always trying to make us understand. Yes, matter and spirit have their source in Krishna. And without Krishna, nothing functions. Absolutely nothing. Just as without the soul in the body, nothing works. Everything else can be there, but it just won't work because Krishna is out of the equation. So we have to accept that we are supremely dependent on Krishna. That is just the fact. We're eternally Krishna's parts and parcels. That will never change. So when we hear about this, this should further increase our conviction that all of this is happening by the will of the Supreme Lord. All of this is happening because Krishna is glancing over material nature and his time, this is his subtle aspect, this is his subtle side, showing how we shouldn't be attracted to this energy of his. We're actually superior. Okay, we're a superior energy, so how do we act? We attach ourselves to Krishna's internal potency, not his external potency. That is what we do. And the process is given for this age of Kali. The Yuga Dharma is none other than chanting Hare Krishna. So there's actually quite a lot of taste we can get from reading this chapter. We can get wowed by understanding Krishna's energy and just how powerful Krishna is and how insignificant we are. It's actually quite a nice feeling. No, Krishna, you're supremely powerful and I'm nothing compared to you. You're taking care of all of this, I'll take shelter of you. There'll be no difficulty at all in trying to take care of an insignificant living entity like myself. So we're tiny parts and parcels of Krishna and we're conditioned. And to get that, we must approach Krishna through his devotees to get rid of our false ego and to stop rejecting Krishna or to stop removing Krishna from the equation. He is the source of matter and spirit simultaneously.
So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there is any questions or comments or corrections. Yes, Mahatma Prabhu.
How Lord Shiva removed the false ego? Which said Lord Shiva removed the false ego. So how did he remove it?
Good question. But Lord Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance, of course, the false ego. And if you trace it back, of course, the cause of us being here is ignorance. So Lord Shiva, his particular duty, he has an amazing duty in which he, I think it's Shiva Sridhar Swami who is explaining how he actually protects Krishna in a sense that he doesn't allow inimical people to approach Krishna in pure devotional service, so he keeps them away. And Lord Shiva directs the living entities to Krishna, and by doing that gradually he's trying to rid us of our false ego, because Krishna diminishes or grinds down that false ego. That is my understanding. You can look it up if you want. I'm sure it's somewhere there.
My question is, how does he do it?
How does he do it? We can ask him. I haven't spoken to him lately, so I can do some research and I'll send him a message. Or we can ask Anuruddha Prabhu. Maybe he's enlightened on that matter. He doesn't know. So we'll send Lord Shiva a text. Or we can pray. It's there. There's a verse in the Brahma Samhita.
Lord Shiva engages people in devotional service.
Lord Shiva engages people in devotional service.
Yeah.
And devotional service is the best way to deal with false ego. Because it means you serve someone else, not yourself. You serve Krishna, not you. You serve Krishna means his devotees, his paraphernalia, etc. His holy dham, his holy name. So by doing that, of course we're all used to serving ourselves, giving ourselves our own abhishek in the morning, decorating ourselves, performing our leelas, etc. throughout the day. So when you practice devotional service, you're not doing that. We're doing something else for Krishna. So the false ego gradually gets chopped off. And because devotional service is so wonderfully, especially for us, given by Srila Prabhupada, it's always in the association of devotees. And devotees are also very good at getting our false ego out through the very genuine concerns and their ways of helping us progress on the path back home, back to Godhead. And we should always see it like that. When we're in devotee care, when we're in devotee association, it will always take us a few years to actually understand that actually this devotee was helping me in my devotional service. Initially, because we want to fight fire with fire. Like, oh Prabhu, what do you mean? You know, something happened, or a devotee tries to guide us or help us. Then the false ego is actually what's reacting. Because we're identifying with doing something perfectly. I've done this degree, I can do this, or I've done this florist thing, so I can arrange flowers, da 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 da. So we actually react from a false ego platform. But if we actually take the time and look back and see, this devotee wants me to perform service in a favorable way to please Krishna and his devotees, then we appreciate them more. And the devotees are the ones who are actually carrying us to Krishna. Not that it's just me and myself doing bhakti and chanting. Devotees carry us. So devotees can detect when the false ego is there, and they kindly try to help us stop identifying with that false ego.
Pretty much. Why?
Why? First canto, second canto, third canto. Here, the CC, Bhagavad Gita. Who is supreme? We get to see what's this energy we're dealing with. This is Krishna. Krishna is not just, you know, we're not sentimentalists and think, oh, Krishna is a cowherd boy and he just plays a flute and he's dancing with the gopis. We get to see, okay, how is everything arranged? How does Krishna's work? These are Krishna's potencies. So it's trying to be impressed upon us what it actually means Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we're hearing all the time about this creation and annihilation. How we are insignificant compared to the Lord. And this should gradually sink in. And this will give us realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Before we even get to hear Krishna's, you know, intimate pastimes, we're hearing so much technicalities, so much jnana, so much knowledge about his energies. And this prepares us to understand, you know, Krishna as a whole, not just Krishna in little sub-parts, but Krishna as a whole. Now Krishna, yes, he has his very intimate side, but also he has his Ishvara side. So these are all different opulences of Krishna, just as attractive and just as sweet as understanding other aspects of Krishna. It is vital that we understand these topics about Krishna. This solidifies our understanding, or this solidifies our faith in Krishna. Like he's, look at what this person is doing. You know, he's here, he's there, he's everywhere, he's not touched by the modes. You know, he's creating and he expands himself and, you know, he has his rudras and he has his, you know, he's lying in his own sweat. How amazing is this? And he's creating. And the universes are you know, floating on the causal ocean. Wow. What an amazing person. No one can do that. No one wants to lie in our sweat. No one wants to rub shoulders with us when we sweat. So we get to appreciate Krishna even more. We just see how amazing Krishna is. We become attracted to Krishna even from hearing about creation and annihilation. This should increase our taste and our thirst to hear about Krishna. So this is repeated all the time so that we can get to appreciate Krishna in full. Is that okay? Yes, I'm going to read the Matavi.
What are these four categories which are mentioned?
There's occasional annihilation, there is constant annihilation, there is final destruction. Sorry, before that. Constant annihilation, occasional. Total material annihilation, and then the final annihilation, or technically liberation, when the living entity gets extricated from the false ego. So the constant annihilation is happening all the time. We see we're in our own body, in the universal egg, so many different things are happening. And occasional annihilation is happening at the end of the night of Lord Brahma, where the three planetary systems also get destroyed.
End of the day.
End of the day, when the three planetary systems get destroyed. And then the third type, the Prakritika, this is at the end of Brahma's 100 years. The total destruction. And then the final one is when the living entity finally also destroys the relationship between matter, or the attachment to matter. It's very simply put in the summary of the chapter.
So the annihilation which happens at the end of every yuga cycle, like at the end of every 4 yugas, would be constant or occasional? Where is that category?
That would be, I think, constant.
Finally.
No, at the end of every yuga?
At the end of every four yugas, like, there is a partial annihilation which happens and then Satya Yuga starts again. No?
That would be...
Right. It's called total. That's the Prakriti, is that right? It says when Brahma's life spans 100 years is finished, there occurs the Prakriti, the total.
No, it's not that one.
No, this is at the end of four yugas. At the end of the cycle.
During his night when Brahma sleeps and the three planetary systems meet destruction.
I think it's occasional. I mean,
yes.
With the introduction,
you can work it out.
Yes. With the introduction. Yeah,
look at which one it is.
Yes, Rosa, would you like to know?
I think there is also occasional partial annihilation and there is a change of manus as well.
Hmm, there you go. So, any still from others, 14 manus who reign. Yes, we can read all about this in the second canto. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita is explained in the Adilila and in the Madhyalila. And of course, first canto. Very elaborately explained. Okay, so it's after 8:30. And it's Easter Friday, so we're all in ecstasy, going to perform devotional service after honoring the breakfast feast prepared by Achin Shripa Maharaji and co. So I thank you very much. Pantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Sai, Sai Gopamandali.